world see the power of devotional service rendered to your lotus feet. Please show them, O Almighty One, the position of those Kurus and Sringayas who worship you, and the position of those who do not. Purport. Here we clearly see the heart of a creature. The great devotee Yudhisthira Maharaj implores Lord Krishna to demonstrate plainly the results of worshipping him and the result of not worshipping him. If the people of the world could understand this, they could begin to recognize that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that everyone's ultimate self-interest lies in surrendering to him. As confirmed by great authorities, Yudhisthira Maharaj is a pure devotee of the Lord, and thus his actual motivation in discharging his duties as a king was to establish the supremacy of Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the real purport of the activities of the Pandavas, which are described in both the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Mahabharata. Therefore, O Lord of Lords, let the people of this world see the power of devotional service rendered to your lotus feet. Please show them, O Almighty One, the position of those Kurus and Sringayas who worship you, and the position of those who do not. I found this translation a little bit ambiguous. The position of those who do not. I was wondering if it meant everyone or just those of the Kurus and Sringayas who do not. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, it means those of the Kurus and Sringayas who do not worship you. So there are two classes of Kurus. Of course, the Pandavas, they're Kurus. And the Sringayas, I don't know, there are so many different branches, different clans, as Prabhupada calls them, so they're related somehow. So some among them are devotees of Krishna, and some of them are not. Of course, Duryodhan, being the leader of the opposing party of those who do not worship Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Yudhisthira Maharaj is asking for Lord Krishna's blessing. Another question here is, well, what does he want Krishna to do exactly? He says, I want you to show them the difference, the position of those who worship you and those who don't worship you. So how is Krishna supposed to do that exactly? So again, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Yudhisthira Maharaj is asking Krishna to bless him, to allow him to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. So the idea is that when Yudhisthira Maharaj performs the Rajasuya sacrifice, then everyone knows that he's a great devotee of Lord Krishna. So they'll see his opulence, the Rajasuya sacrifice. The very word means king of sacrifices, or the sacrifice for anointing the king. Suya means sacrifice, and Raja means king. So this is the greatest sacrifice. He's going to be crowned emperor of the world. He's going to show how much opulence he has. But Yudhisthira Maharaj himself, he's not attracted to that opulence at all. He's doing it simply as service to Krishna. That's his whole motivation. Everything he does is about devotional service to Krishna. If you read the Mahabharata, you may think other things are going on. There are other motives. But the actual motive is devotional service to Krishna. The Mahabharata, of course, is an epic. I was reading a concise encyclopedia, what an epic is. So one of the characteristics of an epic is there tends to be one particular hero. Now in this epic, the one particular hero, you may wish it was Krishna, but as the story goes, it's not really Krishna. The particular hero is the Pandava family, really. They're not just one, there are actually five heroes. But the story of the Mahabharata, the epic, the hero of that adventure, that great epic, is the Pandavas. And of course, especially Yudhisthira, because he's the one who's, it's all about getting him in control as the emperor of the world. This Rajasuya sacrifice, in some sense, is a culmination. We know the whole background, so many things have gone on up to lead to this point. This is such a glorious event. And Yudhisthira Maharaj will be showing such great opulence. So he's the hero of the story, really. And he is a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he wants to show, according to the principle, yad yada charate shreshtas, that people tend to follow great person. So if I'm the greatest, I'm the emperor of the whole world, people will see that I am a great devotee of Krishna. And look at the opulence that I have. So this is what he's asking Krishna to do. But allow me to perform this sacrifice. Give me your blessing, because otherwise, how could I perform this sacrifice without your blessing? So Yudhisthira Maharaj is, of course, a great personality, a great devotee. We have so many great devotees. Sometimes we come across the phrase in Prabhupada's book, he is the greatest devotee. So you might go, well, this person's on the top, the very top. Of course, that position is Srimati Radharani's position, the greatest devotee. But in so many other places, we see Prabhupada refers, oh, he is the greatest devotee. Narada Muni is the greatest devotee, and so on. So Yudhisthira Maharaj is also the greatest devotee. Sometimes I take it that this just means, you know, they're positive, comparative, and superlative. So in the superlative category, you can have so many devotees. You can call them all the greatest. So the great, greater, and greatest. So he's in that category of the greatest of devotees. Yudhisthira Maharaj, he's the son of Dharma, Dharmaraj or Yamaraj. He's sometimes called morality personified. We all know he's famous for never telling a lie in his whole life. Just imagine, it's pretty hard to imagine, isn't it? Especially today, Kali Yuga, this is the age of cheating. So practically to get anything done, you have to tell at least a little white lie once in a while. In fact, Prabhupada more or less authorizes it for Vaishyas. You have to say, you know, for you, I make no profit. This is, of course, a lie, because otherwise how could you stay in business? So, but his whole life, and everything he did, he was morality personified. Just as Duryodhan, on the other side, he was offense personified. You just see his morality. This, of course, sometimes this, the Mahabharata is portrayed as, you know, the battle between good and evil. But people want to take it just as a metaphor in that sense. This is just a metaphor. It's all made up. But you have the evil on one side and the good on the other side. So you can take it metaphorically, but it's actual fact. Of course, we take it as actual history. That these personalities, they really personified these qualities. Yudhisthira personified goodness, and Duryodhan personified envy and offensiveness and so on. But Yudhisthira Maharaj, his greatest power, here he says, Anubhavam. He wants to show the power of service to your lotus feet. So Yudhisthira's power was above everything else, his ability to control Krishna. Krishna acted as a subordinate to Maharaj Yudhisthira. After the battle of Kurukshetra, you have this, as it's played out in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, battle is done and Krishna's getting ready to leave. He's going to go back to Dwarka. He's been away for quite some time. And now he's back. Now he's getting ready to return. And just as he's about to return, well, first of all, he has to save King Parikshit in the womb of Uttara. And Kunti Devi offers her prayers. And after her prayers, Krishna's about to leave. Then Yudhisthira Maharaj just can't stand to see him go. So he begs him to stay, as he's done at other times. And Krishna can't turn him down. So spends a few more months there because Yudhisthira Maharaj doesn't want him to leave. And then Krishna, Yudhisthira Maharaj and the Pandavas, they're glorified by Narada Muni and others because of the position of Krishna and in the relationship they have with him. Especially Hanumanji in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. I know you're all familiar with the general layout of the story, the first part, where Narada Muni wants to find the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy, in other words, the greatest devotee. So different, he goes to one person, and this person, he glorifies that person for the great service, and then the person says, no, not me, I don't have a speck of devotion or Krishna's mercy, you should go to this person. So then that person, the same thing happens repeatedly, the same scene. Narada Muni glorifies according to what he has just heard from the previous devotee. And then the devotee whom he's glorifying sends him to someone else. So in this progression, we get to Hanuman, and then Hanuman, he sends Narada to the Pandavas, and especially Yudhishthira Maharaj. So he says so many wonderful things about Yudhishthira Maharaj. First of all, he says to basically counteract the idea that, well, the Pandavas are such great devotees of Krishna, why are they suffering so much? Why do they go through so many hardships? So the first point that Hanuman makes is, all of these sufferings that the Pandavas went through, they were because of Krishna's desire to glorify them. Because by putting them through these tests, everyone, the whole world, could see what great devotees they were and what great character they had, how courageous they were, how charitable they were, all the wonderful qualities, the qualities of a person in goodness, what we consider good qualities, glorious qualities. Krishna wanted to show people, look at these, these are my pure devotees, and look how wonderful they are. Look at the great qualities that they have. So he put them through all these trials and tribulations so that these would come out. Really, the Mahabharata is about that. You see what amazing personalities they are, the Pandavas. They had to go through so much. And they were always so steadfast, determined and steadfast, and just like Yudhishthira himself. Of course, his name, Yudhishthira, means one who is steady in battle. We find in many Kshatriya's names, they have Yudha in their name. Yudha means to fight or battle. So Yudhishthira, he's steady in battle. But he's not only steady in battle, he's steady in his determination, his conviction to follow morality, to not deviate from it at all. So sometimes in these different tests we see in the Mahabharata, for example, Bhishma, he's a little ready to maybe break the rules a little bit. He wouldn't mind telling a lie here and there. Or Bhima, excuse me. Bhima is always like that. He's so, because he's very, you know, very passionate Kshatriya. He has that really fighting spirit. And he sometimes gets angry at Yudhishthira because Yudhishthira's disposition is so, it's almost sattvic. He's so much like a Brahmin. But he's so attached to doing the right thing. And he always consults with others, consults with Daumya, the family priest, to understand what to do. And whatever's the right thing to do according to Dharma, that's what he'll do. He'll always do that, guided by the authorities. So whenever there was something, some challenge, that they were presented with so many challenges, Yudhishthira always did exactly the right thing. So the Mahabharata, this comes out, and people are able to see, oh, the devotees of Krishna. This devotee, famous, very famous devotee of Krishna, everyone knew that the Pandavas were great devotees of Lord Krishna. So just see their character coming out. So this is the first point that Hanuman made. All the suffering that the Pandavas went through is about that. Krishna glorifying his devotees. Now Yudhishthira, Krishna had such, and we know of course that Krishna, especially in his Dwarka Leela, he followed the rules according to his position. So according to his position, Yudhishthira Maharaj was his superior. And of course, now after the Rajasuya sacrifice, he will be the emperor of the world, so all other kings are subordinate to him. So despite Krishna's position in Dwarka, and Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was always very, took the reverential position in his association with Yudhishthira Maharaj. Of course, sometimes Yudhishthira Maharaj would have a hard time allowing it, but generally Krishna would play this role. In fact, this reminds me sometimes of the scene I have in my mind is when Yudhishthira was, for example, walking, the etiquette was that others would walk behind him and they would offer praises, they would glorify him. I was thinking, it reminds me of the scene of Prabhupada on the morning walk and everyone's walking behind him. And it said that one should offer praise or glorification of the spiritual master. The disciples should do that. And sometimes devotees would do that. Oh, Prabhupada, you're so wonderful, you've written all these books and so on. So Krishna would walk behind Yudhishthira Maharaj and praise him, offer praises, glorify him, just like a subordinate king, because that was the etiquette. So sweet, this exchange, you see, Krishna's having with his devotees. Now Yudhishthira Maharaj, of course, the Pandavas, we heard, I was mentioning last week about Indraprastha, a little something about the origin of Indraprastha. But after the Rajasuya sacrifice, I think after Rajasuya, but definitely after the Kurukshetra battle, then they were ruling in Hastinapur. Now, when Hanumanji is speaking with Narada, this happens later. So this is when the Pandavas are ruling, or Yudhishthira is ruling, after the Kurukshetra War. So he's the king of the world, emperor of the world, and he's ruling there. And one thing Hanuman says is that Hastinapur, it attracts so many sages because of the devotion, because of the stature of the devotee Yudhishthira Maharaj, because the Pandavas are known for their devotion, and they know that Krishna comes and visits them regularly because they're such great devotees, that the place is full of sages. So it's become like a sacred forest where the sages hang out to, you know, worship Krishna, perform their austerities, and so on. Hastinapur is full of great sages because the Pandavas are famous because Krishna comes there. So people are always thinking, oh, Krishna might come at any time. And the Pandavas, too, they're always scheming how to get Krishna to come. At the end, after Narada Muni is with Hanuman, first of all, the way that it unfolds is so nice in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, because Naradaji is glorifying, or Hanuman is glorifying Yudhishthira Maharaj. And whenever this happens repeatedly with Narada, when he hears some devotee glorified, he just goes into ecstasy, starts dancing and chanting, jumping around, just in ecstasy. So Hanuman, he controls himself, he continues glorifying him, but at some point he can't control himself either, glorifying Yudhishthira Maharaj and the Pandavas, and they both start jumping around and dancing. So at some point, Narada decides, now, well, I just have to go there. This is then what happens. He gets so enthusiastic about this next devotee, I now have to go see the Pandavas. So he starts to go, and Hanuman is so excited, he decides, I'm going to go with you. But then he, after a few moments, he kind of calms down and says, no, I can't go. This is my service. This is where I do my service to Ram. He knows, actually, Hanuman knows that Ram is an expansion of Krishna. But his bhava is toward Ram. He lives, takes place in Kimpurusha Varsha, which is where Hanuman stays. Hanuman himself is a Kimpurusha, which literally means, what man? What? Are you a man or human or not? That's the idea of Kimpurusha. So he lives in Kimpurusha Varsha and offers prayers. But Lord Ram is not there. He offers prayers to Lord Ram, wherever Ram is, in Ayodhya. Ram was in Ayodhya. But he's always expecting that maybe he'll come or maybe he'll have some service for me. So he serves in separation. So he realizes, oh, I can't go to Dwarka. I can't leave here. What if Ram comes and I'm there in Dwarka? That would be a worse thing. So then he just encourages Narada to go there. So Narada, as we see, of course, as often happens, actually after Hanuman makes this decision, then he offers some more prayers. He doesn't stop. He was just ready to go, and Narada was ready to leave. But then he starts offering more glorification. And there he describes, towards the end of his prayers, how everything Yudhishthira does is just for Krishna. And this is something, a point that has come to my mind reading about Bharata. It seems like there's material attachment among the Pandavas, like this ordinary family relationship. It kind of seems mundane in one sense, how attached they are to each other as a family. So you think, isn't this just on the bodily platform? But Hanumanji says, don't think that way, because that's not what it's about. Yudhishthira loves them because of their devotion to Krishna, because they're pure devotees of Krishna. This is the bond that ties them together. That's why Yudhishthira loves Bhima and Arjuna, Nakula and Sahadeva and Draupadi. That's why he loves them so much, because they're all completely attached to Krishna. They're all pure devotees of Krishna. So this is their great power to attract him, to attract his devotion, apparently family devotion. It's about their devotion to Krishna. And as far as his opulence, Hanuman says, of course, Yudhishthira is living in great opulence. One thing Hanuman says just before Narada leaves, very end of the chapter, he says, don't think that they're just ordinary grihastha. Where you and I, we're celibates, brahmacharis. Hanuman is a brahmachari and Narada Muni is a brahmachari. Don't think that we're somehow in a higher position because we're brahmacharis and they're just ordinary grihasthas engaged in politics. That the only reason Yudhishthira Maharaj accepts all this opulence is for the glorification of Krishna. This goes back to the central idea of this verse today. It's about glorifying Krishna. And he says that Yudhishthira's lack of attraction for his opulence is just like if you offer a hungry man gold or jewels or whatever. He's starving. He just wants to eat. Anything you offer him other than food has no interest in it. Can't eat gold, can't eat diamonds, can't. Doesn't want that. He wants food, wants nourishment. Dying. So Yudhishthira is like that. He only wants Krishna. So the opulence is there, but it has no meaning to him, no significance, no attraction for him. Because his whole meditation, his whole consciousness is on Krishna. He's a pure devotee of Krishna. He's fully absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. So everything he does is about that. In fact, we hear often about great devotees living in great opulence. Swayambhuva Manu is described there, how he enjoyed his material opulence in Krishna consciousness, in a Krishna conscious way. So I think the idea behind this is you can have material opulence. What does it mean? Of course, he's the king. He's the emperor. So naturally, probably might use the word sense gratification. He enjoyed his sense gratification in the Krishna conscious spirit. So what does it mean? It means he has good food. He has good clothes. He has a comfortable place to live. So that's all you might say, sense gratification. These things are nice for the senses. Be able to taste good food and wear nice clothing and sit on and have a soft bed and so on. So you can say this is sense gratification, but it's not selfish sense gratification. It just means that these things are pleasing to the senses. But for the pure devotee, they're not agitating to the senses. They don't distract from the devotee's service to Krishna and devotion to Krishna. It's just incidental. In fact, the devotee could live very easily in not opulence, without any opulence at all. Just like Prabhupada himself, he very much liked living in his little hut in Mayapur. He liked that very simple lifestyle with the mud floor and so on. So he could live anywhere, but he was comfortable because everywhere he was doing his service to Krishna. So it just happens that Yudhishthira Maharaj lives in great opulence, but it has no attraction for him. It's only there. He only lives in that opulence because of his desire to serve Krishna. So Yudhishthira Maharaj, so this is something about Hanuman glorifying Yudhishthira Maharaj. Yudhishthira Maharaj plays a role in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam. He asks a question in the beginning of the seventh canto. Or Parikshit Maharaj asks Shukadeva Goswami a question about Krishna's seeming partiality. So to answer the question, Shukadeva Goswami quotes Yudhishthira Maharaj asking the same question of Narada Muni. I think it was at the Rajasuya sacrifice. So then the whole seventh canto, Narada Muni begins answering. He answers that question. Then Yudhishthira Maharaj asks another question. It goes on and on. And the whole seventh canto is Narada Muni speaking to Yudhishthira Maharaj, which is interesting because in the seventh canto, Narada Muni is quoting Prahlad Maharaj, telling what he learned from Narada Muni. So Narada Muni is relating what Prahlad is quoting him himself. So anyway, the whole seventh canto is Yudhishthira Maharaj hearing from Narada Muni. So in that sense, Narada Muni is also the guru, at least the Siksha guru, of Yudhishthira Maharaj. So he has wonderful association. He's on that level. He's associating with Krishna. He's associating with all these great devotees. At the Rajasuya sacrifice, all the greatest personalities in the universe were there. And this is his great stature. And again, he takes that position because he wants to use it to glorify Krishna. So the translation again. Therefore, O Lord of Lords, let the people of this world see the power of devotional service rendered to your lotus feet. Please show them, O Almighty One, the position of those Kurus and Srinjayas who worship you and the position of those who do not. Any questions or comments?
You were mentioning how the attachment of the Pandavas was just because of the great devotion that they saw in each other. And why is it that Queen Kunti prayed for their affection for kinsmen be severed?
Well, I think you would just see that as a prayer of humility. Of course, the devotees, even the Pandavas, they might say, oh, I'm just attached to my family. I'm an ordinary person attached to my family. The pure devotees depict themselves as ordinary persons. So I think we could see it in that sense. And it's an honest thing. She may feel that way, that my attachment is not completely pure. I have the pure desires or whatever. Please remove those. So out of a humility or heartfelt prayer, this comes out. Whereas we, looking at her, we would say, well, probably it's not there, actually. She's a pure devotee of Krishna, but she's speaking this way because that's the devotee's mood of her humility. Humility is such a strong characteristic of devotees. I was just reading one purport where Prabhupada said, I forget the context of the statement, but he said, the devotees are not interested in seeing Krishna's face, they only want to see his feet. Out of humility, they only want to see Krishna's lotus feet. So you might say, well, that's not really true. Obviously, we want to see Krishna's face. But here, Prabhupada, he's speaking in humility, that devotees only want to see Krishna's lotus feet because that's the way they feel, so humble. And we all know the story of Hanuman supposedly didn't know what Sita looked like because he never saw above her feet. So in humility, devotees speak in certain ways where you might say technically it's not true what they're saying, but it is true in another sense. In the context of bhava, prema, it's true. That's true actually in a higher perspective, from a higher perspective. Anything else? Just concerning it to
you. You said that the Pandavas were going through a lot of problems. Krishna arranged that so that their position and the activities will be conspicuous. A good devotee. Sometimes you see devotees in the movement, they go through a lot of struggles also. Can we see that also for them?
Well, Krishna does things according to our level of devotion. He may not be wanting to use us as an example. Maybe he's trying to purify us by the fire of ordeal. He's trying to raise us to a higher platform, see how we respond, giving us tests, because that makes us stronger. Just like in ordinary life, if you want to get strong, physically strong, then it has to be resistance. In lifting weight, you have to lift weights, so you can't lift feathers, you have to lift weights if you want to be strong. So Krishna sends us weights to lift so we can become stronger in Krishna consciousness. So that may be Krishna's motive in our case, neophyte devotees trying to advance in Krishna consciousness. Of course, not every devotee is a neophyte. There are advanced devotees, and Krishna can do that. We can be amazed, wow, look what this devotee went through, and look at their devotion, and look how their glories are shining because of this great hardship they went through on Prabhupada's behalf, carry out Prabhupada's mission. So we can also see examples of that. We can see that as Krishna using his devotees. Yes.
I'm wondering, there must be a difference, though, between what you're saying, how sometimes the neophyte devotees suffer in order to get purification, but then versus the suffering of the pure souls who come down to assist Lord Chaitanya in this movement, who don't come here to work out karma, like Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, like we see them also having gone through like a lot of hardships.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we understand that in the same context as Krishna wanting to display the Pandavas qualities? Because they're not here to work out karma.
So the Pandavas are fully surrendered servant. They're Krishna's eternal servant. They're eternal associates. They're appearing with him. His road show as he travels around. So whatever he wants them to do, they will do. Just like Arjuna was in illusion. He was bewildered, apparently. And Krishna, so that Krishna could speak the Bhagavad Gita. So he had to play that role of being in Maya. So whatever they do for Krishna. And yeah, you're right, they're not suffering any karma. In fact, it's said in the Chaitanya Bhagavat that if you see, now it said that all of Lord Chaitanya's associates were Nitya Siddhas. So Vrindavan Das Thakur says that if you see these one of these devotees apparently suffering, you should know that this is Paramananda Sukha. It's not Vyavahara Dukkha. Vyavahara Dukkha means ordinary suffering. But Paramananda Sukha means transcendental ecstasy. So what seems to us suffering is actually ecstasy for them. Now one way to see that is because it's their service to Krishna. That's why it's ecstasy. There's nothing a devotee wants more than Krishna's service, to be able to serve Krishna. So in whatever form that service comes, that's ecstasy to them. Just like, and in some ways, of course, this may be incomprehensible. It is incomprehensible to us because we don't know the consciousness of the Mahabhagavata. But and we find in many places, this comes up in Brihad Bhagavatamrita also, that ordinary people, they can't hear about the Brijbasis because for their point of view, the Brijbasis are just suffering all the time. All they do is suffer. They're always crying and they're always going mad and they never get to see Krishna. They're just so heartbroken. And ordinary people, they see, wow, this is horrible. I don't want to be a devotee of Krishna. So, but what is it? We know this is the highest ecstasy. It's the deepest, but it's beyond compare. So when the Pandavas are apparently suffering, what they're experiencing is something different than what it may appear to us. And again, this principle is there. This is their service to Krishna. So they relish it. They relish it. And they get to see, they get to interact with Krishna. There's nothing greater than this. I've been corresponding. There's a man who's been writing to me, and he's into the Vedas. He just thinks the Vedas are the greatest thing. So Sankhya is wonderful, and you know, Jnana, and it's all equal. Bhakti is just the same as everything else, and you shouldn't raise one thing above the other because it's all Veda. It's all in the Veda. So I try to make the point to him that, you know, it's all ultimately, yeah, it's all about Vedas, but it's all about Krishna. Ultimately, it's about God. So when you have God, what more is there? What's the point of studying Sankhya? This, of course, I even quoted in Sukadeva Goswami says this in the beginning of his teachings to Pariksit Maharaj. The purpose of life is to remember Narayan at the end. So whether you do it Sankhya, yoga, however you do it, that's it. So when you have Krishna, what else is there? What's the point of wasting your life doing these other things, basically, being distracted by these things? So they're all there in the Vedas, but they're not all equal. So when you come to the position of becoming Krishna's eternal associate, then that's just is incomparable. There's nothing that can compare to that. And the happiness and the ecstasy and the fulfillment and whatever superlative adjectives you want to use in glorifying it, there's nothing that compares. So the ecstasy the Pandavas are feeling also, even though apparently from the mundane point of view it may not seem that way to us, they're certainly relishing great transcendental ecstasy within because it's their service to Krishna. So yeah, we're not quite on that level yet. At least I can say I'm not. Troubles that come don't give me transcendental ecstasy necessarily. But we're working towards that. We have to react. Try to train ourselves to react in a positive Krishna conscious way so we can come ultimately to that level. Ramanyapu? You get the microphone.
Nice lecture you gave me. I was listening to a lecture from Srila Prabhupada related to this topic. Srila Prabhupada mentions he first gave the example of Lord Jesus Christ, how he suffered and he got the karma of the people. And then he gives the example of Haridas Thakur, you know, how he got tortured, you know, 21 mm-hmm. market, something. And Lord Nityananda also. So Prabhupada says, Krishna will give you a test. You be prepared according to your spiritual advancement. So he's not going to give you a test that you can't pass. Never. Mm-hmm. He will test you the things you can pass. You know, kind of test. So, but you should be prepared like that. And then he said, like, yes, when he was preaching, traveling, Srila Prabhupada, he was not allowed to go in one country He said, what was my mistake? I'm just preaching. But they didn't allow me to go in the country. Yeah. So what was my mistake? I'm just preaching. So you preachers be prepared for any tribulations.
All right, I'd like to stop now. I have an appointment with a truck to pull it back to God who's done loads. See the Prabhupada.